It sounds easy, and it should look easy. That's the goal, is to make it look easy, but it's not easy.
Welcome, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
So our next guest on The Art of Construction is going to be Ben Wood, the owner of Architect Outdoor Living. Crazy guy that was in the life insurance industry and just hated it. Two kids, wife at home, said, I'm going to buy a franchise called Architect and go into selling outdoor living. And then his third kid came and figured out how to work in the construction arena. I think it'll be some good conversation with Ben Wood of Architect Outdoor Living.
You know, the thing that's interesting, too, is that Ben helped build our conference room out of his material, and constantly people are asking about it. So I think our listening audience is going to find what Ben has to share pretty darn interesting and helpful in helping grow their business for architects and contractors.
So, yeah, we can definitely talk through how the synergy of, you know, Ben and I had a lot to figure out and dove in. Both had a lot of passion and just love the construction industry and have really grown our business by listening to our customers. And Ben really is a great sales guy. And I think we'll get some good tips from Ben. So let's go have a fireside chat with Ben Wood, Architect Outdoor Living. Here we are with Ben Wood of Architect Outdoor Living, a good friend of mine, a business colleague that's even built a whole gazebo in the center of our showroom that you got to come down and check out how we integrated doors into his outdoor living space in the middle of a big showroom. Ben Wood, we're going to start out with a new plan of attack here. You're the first one that's going to get the speed round. So you ready, Ben?
It's an honor.
So what is your construction type focus?
Well, we design and build custom outdoor living spaces. So I guess if you had to classify us, you would say custom residential exterior remodel.
So what's your favorite beverage after a long day of working on a deck?
Oh, wow. I really like a gin martini, but that's probably not the first thing I would go for. I'd go for a milk stout from Left Hand Brewing Company.
There you go. And you brew some beer too, right?
I brew a little bit, yeah. Usually I need the help of some friends just to give me the inspiration and to do it, because it's a lot of work, and you know, we all work really hard. It's hard to find time to brew.
Yeah, but I've had a few of your beers. They're pretty good.
They work out.
Favorite place you've traveled?
The Ngorongoro Crater, Tanzania.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What was the reason for that trip?
Well, our house got hit with a hailstorm back in the 80s. I forget when it was. And instead of taking the insurance money and re-siding the house, my mom and dad and I, we went to Africa. and decided to just live with it, the damage on the house. So it was a good. I was 12 years. I turned 12. When I was there.
Nice. Yeah. Favorite hobby?
Gosh, I think I've lost most of my hobbies at this point, but I really like mountain biking. Right now I'm into mountain biking. A goal this year, and as soon as I hit this number, I'm buying a mountain bike, a new one.
Sweet.
And I did it.
Nice.
And I bought the mountain bike. Haven't ridden it much, but I did.
That's
it.
The first step.
Yeah.
What bike did you get?
I got a Titus Racer X. Do you know about them?
Well, I've just gotten a mountain biking myself. I just got an old used one that Grant, uses an animal on a mountain bike, and I walk up a lot of the trail trying to keep up with them. But it's a lot of fun, a great exercise.
Sure, yeah.
To get out, and really rewarding when you get to the top of the climb, and then you get the fun of cruising down.
Awesome. It's really awesome. So this bike is like way out of my league. It's full suspension, you know, all the fancy brakes. It's like a professional grade bike, but I got it as a hand-me-down. I bought it from a guy who is a sponsored racer, and his team got him a new bike, and this bike apparently was like $7,000 when it was brand new, and I got it for $1,500.
Oh, that's a steal.
And he never raced it. He just kind of rode it for pleasure.
Fun.
Very nice.
So Ben Wood, Architect Outdoor Living Spaces. So he, again, put the stuff in our showroom. So if you're in the Denver area, you got to come down and see his space. Tell us about how you got into the franchise of Architect Outdoor Living, because correct us if we're wrong, it is a franchise, and feel free to talk to us about that as well.
Yeah, Architect is a franchise. It's national. There are about 50 of us offices like mine, where we're just small, local, custom builders like myself who've just kind of figured out that there's a little bit more professional way to go about this contracting. You know, with that said, you know, we chip a portion of our annual revenue into the same bucket with all of the other guys. And for that, we have a drafting team on staff in Richmond, Virginia. But, you know, we design everything on the ground locally. We, you know, we help the customer pick out the products and the railings and the design the deck or the patio or whatever it might be to fit the site. So there's quite a bit of site survey involved on a local level, but it's really the drafting team that's going to come through and calculate exactly how big the footings need to be to accommodate the loads. And, you know, we've got really nice structural that we take to every project for permits. And it really helps to get everybody on the same page, you know, the homeowner as to what they're buying, and the carpenter as to what they're building, the inspectors as to what they're inspecting. So there's really not a lot of room for interpretation there. So it's a really neat business system, and it's worked out well. So how we got into Arkadeck Outdoor Living is kind of an interesting story. My previous life, I sold Harley-Davidson motorcycles for a little while. Then I got into the insurance and financial world, insurance and investments, and I did that for about 7 years. So by industry standards, that was a pretty good whack at it, right?
It is, because the turnover in that industry is significant.
It
no
is.
Doubt.
It is. It's something like one out of every three is gone within the first 3 years,
yeah.
And it gets worse from there. So I did.
He was good at it. He did all of our stuff.
Well, I did some. Yeah, I did. I think I did a good job, but I was so focused on. And this is going to sound bad, but I was so focused on doing the right thing that I did the right thing right out of that business. Unfortunately, that system is just rigged. That you've got to be looking out for yourself if you want to make it.
Yeah,
and that's just not who I am. So anyway, as a part of that business, we made it part of our mission statement to be involved in the community and to give back to the community. And as an offshoot of that, we created this. This was right during the downfall of the economy. Everything was crashing. Everybody was, the sky was falling. So a lot of talented people were out of work, or what we would call in career transition. As a result of that, we started a group called the Denver Jobs Network. And in the Denver Jobs Network grew to this thing where we had 50 or 60 people every single week in this one room in a church in South Denver. We just were doing anything we can to help these people get out of the rut. You know, whether it was bringing in resume professionals or people who had advice to give on interviewing skills, we would bring in authors and speakers, motivational speakers. And every week it was just this whole attempt to get people to, if you can't find the situation, or you can't get back into the same career that you've been in for a long time, you can't find the situation you want, you know, this is still America, right? You go out and you find it. You make it happen. And so one of the things we did with that group was we brought in a franchise broker. And so that franchise broker came in and was speaking with the audience about franchising, and you know what a good idea that is in theory. You know, you have a proven business system, you've got a product or a service that is repeatable, and a system in place that you can learn, and so you don't have to really, you know, start from scratch and start from the ground up. If you can buy into a business system, what a great way to make a transition into something else. So I'm listening to this franchise broker, and I'm just kind of looking out over the audience, you know, my little flock of people, and I'm thinking, I hope somebody's really listening to this. I hope this really clicks with somebody, because it is a great idea in theory, right? And then the franchise broker moved on to a new, you know, she was showing some different ideas, different businesses, you know, Jamba Juices and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But then she came across this one, and she said, that's a really nice new opportunity that's all about outdoor living, designing these spaces that really blow out and expand the living space of people's homes. You know, people are making the decision to stay in their houses longer these days, not maybe moving as much. Maybe just deciding to stick around and make that home environment what you want it to be, instead of continuing to buy that next house and that next house. So I was listening to her talk, and I thought, well, if I can sell life insurance policies, I can sure as shit sell a deck. I can sell a deck and a pergola. You know, yeah. I mean, this is stuff that people want.
Yeah.
They know what they kind of have a good idea of what they want. It's just your job to come alongside them and show them what's actually feasible and what will fit their budget. So that was kind of how I heard about the opportunity, and okay. I thought, that's how I'm going to transition from the world of insurance into building.
Yeah, and you and I had a few of your micro beers and maybe a couple milk stouts along the way you were getting into that. So I'm thinking about doing an outdoor living franchise. And I was like, you know, I've been in the building industry my whole life. And my father, that's what he did. And we had a big family, so we'd fix up every house. So I, you know, that's all I've ever done. And I know you are in life insurance. So I was like, wow, if you're going to start your own business, I think this franchise is good for you because the systems and structures that we've had to put in place in Mountain View are just the amount of time and effort we put into that is like just astronomical. So I thought that was really cool for you wanting to a totally change of pace, but have a resource team behind you. Yeah. So that was you doing that knowing at home you had a few kids. And at the time, where were you at the home life when you decided to make that trench from you? And you were really, you had a good book of business, really well respected in the life insurance industry, but you just hated it. So you got to do what you love. Right. And that was what we talked about. And I was like, if you don't love it, then do it now when the market's and it's going to come back up. And now, luckily, you've kind of got your business established and the market's turned.
That's absolutely right. You know, when I started talking about it, you were one of the exceptions. I mean, a lot of people looked at me and said, "You got to be crazy." You know, they were looking at the sky was falling, the markets were crashing, businesses were going out of business left and right. And that's just kind of the backwards thinking of an entrepreneur, right? An entrepreneur is thinking, "Well, this might be the time to start something while all the competition is getting their ass kicked. Why don't we start to build something? Because there's really no place to go from there but up, right?" And so I had some naysayers along the way.
Yeah. And a lot of the naysayers are the old school guys that, the market's going to go up and how are you going to come out of this and put it together? And that's all stuff that I think we really need to look at.
Yeah.
We just did an interview with Brian Workman, the owner of Blind Corners and Curves, and his whole thing is all about hiring right and conservative growth. That was the message when you really talked about it. My biggest fear for you is, you know, your wife was going to do the books and it was all in. So if it didn't work, your whole family was then with little guys on the way and more coming and all that stuff. But besides that, you were really smart about thinking through how you were going to spend the little bit of money you had to launch to the market.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of brings up an interesting point. You know, as the listeners have heard before, I was a builder for a good period of time, and I certainly understand what it's like to be a contrary thinker, but in the contracting business, it's pretty unusual. So is that an approach that you take? Obviously, on the way into the business, you took that approach. Are you continuing to look at things from a different perspective than the commonplace?
You know, I think so. I think that's a great question. I think most contractors kind of fall into the category that they're 100% focused on how everything and all the systems can benefit them. I think I've taken a different approach, and that is, you know, from day one, I've wanted every business relationship that I create, whether that's with the customer or whether that's with the various trades, you know, the carpenters, the masons, the roofing guys, the underdeck drain guys, all of these people who specialize, I wanted them to always benefit from a job that I would come to them with, an opportunity. So I'm always wanting to make sure that my job's very clean and profitable for whoever I rope into the deal with me, as opposed to some other contractors who are, you know, they continually burn relationships along the way because they're worried too much about their own bottom line and not worried enough about the people who are working for them making money.
Well, and I think that's an important thing to focus on for all of our listeners, architects and contractors right now. When the market is strong, it's easy to go down that path and not get into trouble. But when the economy turns is when the people like yourself, the way you're treating other people, whether it be customers or other tradespeople, those that are taking care of those folks are going to be the ones that survive in the leaner times.
And from a supplier standpoint, the people like Ben Wood that want to come in and do what we call the needs analysis and make sure the customers are getting the right stuff and being at the meetings and really being part of that on the front end, we all make mistakes. Every job has opportunities, correct? Oh, yeah. So the guys that are really going in it together, taking care of it through the job, when the problems occur, you both are really in there to help each other out through that too. And it's all about the relationship. You got to buy right to sell right and have a good transition through the process.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your business model is very much like a general contractor, but specific to decks and outdoor living. So you have to rely on a lot of tradespeople, which means there's a lot of coordination. So throughout that whole process, it becomes critical.
Yeah, it does. I mean, communication is critical. I would say, yeah, I've taken the attitude where I'm just paying everything forward. And if I know going into a job that I have the job priced right and that I have, you know, a fat margin on that job, and I don't, and I've done my job to eliminate as many potential problems up front before we go under construction, then I'm, you know, a wise person once told me that you can actually hold more sand in your hand if you have your fingers open than you can with your hand cupped. Like, it's just a funny thing about sand. So if you try to hold on too tight to that sand, too tight to that money, a lot of that sand just falls right out of your fist, right? But if you have your hand open and you let that sand kind of fall through the cracks and make sure that it's feeding everybody who's involved on the job, at the end of the day, you're going to have a bigger pile of sand in your hand. Does that make sense?
It does. It's an interesting thought, and it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's just also another way of describing that would be looking at business for the long term and not the short term.
Yeah, I think you pay it forward, right? You're paying it forward so that, you know, if your guys know that you paid them a little bit more on this job and that job, and you make it a point to say, hey, look, I'm doing this for you. Then when the going gets tough or you run into a problem, boy, it's pretty amazing to see how quickly problems get fixed, and they're not coming to you asking for money at that point. It's just like, just get it done. Everybody takes care of everybody as opposed to everyone watching out for themselves.
Yeah, and in today's market, that's really important when things are high and, you know, you see subcontractors and the cutthroat contractors coming in and say, what are you getting paid? Oh, I'm $11 an hour. I'll give you $15. And they just literally jump ship, you know, and go to the next guy. But that, you know, if that's how that guy is going and running his business, you know, he's just going to go take the next guy that will come work for him for 11 instead of 15.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's the mindset that we want to have, relationships of people that listen to this show that are part of this network, that we're all in this together. It's the big circle that we're all taking care of each other.
Ben, yeah, what's your geographic focus for the business?
For Architect Outdoor Living, for Architect of the Foothills in particular, that's my office, we would love to be able to stay within 30 miles my office. Right now, it's a home office.
With a spot here in Mountain View.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got the market here in Denver that there's more business out there than all the deck builders and outdoor living contractors can even handle. So if we can focus our efforts on Arvada market, Westminster, Broomfield, Golden is a great market for us. Oddly enough, Louisville and Lafayette Superior have been wonderful. So it's really sort of that north and west quadrant of Denver that has yet to be connected by the C-470 loop.
I got you.
It's kind of our geographic.
And you mentioned pay it forward. There's other Architect franchises in this market, and you have really earned a relationship with those other guys in home shows. I see you guys all working together, which is what a great concept versus, I think typically you'd probably see most of them competing and really, this is my territory, don't go over this line. And you spend way more time looking over your shoulder, yeah, and then you all have your own booths versus coming together. And you guys, I think you've done a great job of working together and know who you are and know your territories and help each other out with the specialties. Because the more and more you specialize, I think sometimes the more and more it grows and you help each other out, you know, yeah, really knowing your wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's been a really good experiment with the two other Architect offices here in town, and I think it's worked out really well because we come together once every year for the large home show in the spring, and by combining those efforts, we're able to have a bigger booth, a better booth, more buy-in from our vendors and our suppliers as far as what we get to display in there and everything. That show, year in and year out, has generated at least a third of our revenue.
Wow.
I'd highly recommend the E-Myth Revisited. We'll put it in the notes. And he talks a lot about, even if you'd never care to do a franchise, create your business like a franchise. Mm-hmm. I really went into that model as far as, you know, the logo, everybody wearing the same stuff, and all the details, the systems checklist, which is really tough in our business that every time we're doing something totally new. So it's not just A, B, C, D, complete, where a lot of businesses are that way. What we do is everything's custom in both Mountain View and both Architect Outdoor Living. So it's customizing it every time, but you still have to have a systems to those customized projects. And then now our new location in Grand Junction, it's plug and play over there. So anybody listening to, either if you're looking at a franchise model or looking to do it yourself, I'd highly recommend the E-Myth Revisited, which talks about creating your business like a franchise for a lot of systems and structure. That, wouldn't you say, from having that resource, you know, obviously you paid a fee. It's either you pay a fee on your own to build it or you pay it outsource. There was definitely a fee.
Yeah.
And then long term, and that's, I think, a big thing you got to think about with franchises is you pay the fee, but then they also have royalties probably, right? So you have to work the pay now, pay later, and all those things along the way.
Well, having read Gerber's books, I couldn't agree more. And one of the real key things to think about is look at what McDonald's does. Whether you're a customer there or not, at one point in your life you probably have been. Everything they do is systemized in a way that you open up the book, and if you want to know what happens on day two or three, you open the book and there it is. So I think that is a good way to describe what it's like to operate your business that way, so that, you know, you can be more successful. And
yeah, and a resource for that is Tuesday Consulting. Her name's Jamie Rowe. So that's really all she does. If you choose to not go the franchise model, but you do want to create your business like a franchise, she creates systems and structure. So Jamie Rowe with Tuesday Consulting, will have her a guest eventually on the show. But a great resource as we're kind of going down this fireside chat to talking about franchises, since that's kind of how you got into the business. Different ways you could look into that. If you want to get out of selling insurance and want to do a handyman business, and you don't have, you know, didn't grow up in the industry, but you're fascinated with design to be an architect or construction.
You know, Ben, one of the things that we always look forward to asking our guests is, what was your favorite project this year?
You know, this year has been an interesting year.
You've had a little bit of growth, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of contractors have probably seen this happen this year in 2014 as a pretty large uptick in our gross revenue. Our margins have not kept up with that, however, because of a couple of jobs. And I'll tell you about one of them. It's both my favorite job and probably close to my least favorite job at the same time. As a result of the home show effort in the spring, I got a lead and went out there and met with some folks. Because of the system that I showed them and the professionalism that kind of comes along with, I think, being able to provide 3D renderings of a proposed project, being able to show them what it looks like when we do have a building contract and those structural plans come through, I think they felt a lot more comfortable opening up their pocketbook and spending some money. Over the course of the year, I actually did two projects for the same homeowner, and the total revenue from these projects is $180,000. So it's a pretty big,
yeah, I'd say that was
pretty big
nice
project. You know, knowing what I know now, I think that a project like that, such high dollars, such high expectations, and so many different trades involved, could potentially put somebody out of business. It could easily go that way.
Yep.
So this was a wonderful project. It was like a 1,000-square-foot deck using the top-of-the-line materials. In this case, it was a TimberTech product. You know, railings of, you know, hundreds of lineal feet of railing with lights and a pergola on top of its deck and architectural panels on top of the pergola. Underneath the deck was a completely dry, usable, livable space with an underdeck drain system, where we pulled in our friends at Conifer Gutter Service to do that install. There was a very large, maybe 1,400 or 1,500 square foot patio down below that deck that we installed, along with an outdoor kitchen, complete with Wolf professional appliances. We went to BAC, Builders Appliance Center, got all of our appliances for the kitchen there. Huge fire feature down below, a wood-fired oven. I mean, this thing was just so many different bells and whistles. And so it was both a wonderful project and very picturesque, you know, for all time. You know, this could be like a once in a lifetime kind of a project for most, you know, small custom builders. And then we also ended up doing 2,000 square feet of pavers for their driveway and walkways around both sides and redoing their pillars. And along the way, they said, hey, by the way, we'd love to replace all these doors that we've got. Do you know anybody? So introduced Mountain View Window and Door and Devin Tilley, and they came up with a custom solution for about four large doors, Eagle Anderson stuff. Really nice stuff. And I don't think I would have been able to propose that project and win that project unless I had good systems in place and the ability to show people what they're going to get for their money.
Well, I think that's critical, too, because we hear that all the time. We try to follow that same process of giving people detailed information so they understand what they're buying. It makes it sound like, from what you've described, that that's been critical in your business and getting homeowners, getting customers to understand what the scope is and ultimately what they're getting for what they're paying. Sounds simple, but oftentimes, particularly when it's busy, you get a quote, you know, we hear it from customers all the time. You get a quote for windows and it's this much money. They don't detail what it is they're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It sounds easy, and it should look easy. That's the goal, is to make it look easy, but it's not easy.
It's a lot of details behind the scenes, and that it's a fine line how far you go with the homeowner to make sure their expectations are set, but not talk for 5 hours about how the stucco band's going to meet the door and how the cherry trim's going to meet the inside and staining to match this and. That's just the doors, and you've hit five different components already that you're managing as the general contractor. But I think one thing that you do very well is you have job site meetings where some of my contractors that I see are the most successful, like Ben with Arkadec, is he'll head a project meeting with the homeowners very scheduled out. Half hour from 12 to 12:30 is Tyler with Conifer Gutter, and he's going to talk about picking your important things, the gutters and the underdeck drainage and where we're going to have to do and where the water's going to go, the high-level stuff, and then you have a meeting behind the scenes with the respected subcontractor and do that with all those different partners. And Ben does that, and the contractors that I see are the most successful is you're a general contractor. You can only know so much about so many things. So get the specialists in there and circle yourself around those specialists to make it successful and hold them accountable. I mean, we had issues. I mentioned the stucco thing is because there was conversation with that with the homeowners, and Ben knows we're going to do the right thing and whatever it is to make the job successful at the end and communicate along the way through that project.
Yeah, I think it's really important for contractors like myself to take advantage of the slow times during the year to build those relationships. You know how we talked about it being a great idea to make sure that everybody's making money and that everybody feels good when you pick up the phone and call them, they're going to pick up the phone and answer, right? So same thing goes for taking advantage of the downtimes in the building season is building those relationships with the other different trades that are out there, various different specialists. Put them in charge of that portion of the project and have them have the accountability on it. But Lord knows I spend enough time on this one big project running around taking care of the little details. And you know, with a kitchen, with underdeck drains, with deck, I mean, all of these aspects of outdoor living, pretty much everything was encompassed in this one project. And so at the end of the day, it was kind of funny. I was able to pay a sales commission on the project, but at the end of the day, my margin was almost zero. And so I'm sitting there thinking, wow, I thought at the beginning of this I was going to make like $40,000, right?
Yeah.
It, as a result of going through the process and every time a little problem would come up, of course, I'm going to say, throw money at it, fix it, fix it, throw money at it, you know. And but at the end of the day, you can very easily be left with not a whole lot to show for it. But there's still a lot of positives that came out of this one. And that is that next time around, we're going to price it better.
Yeah.
And we're going to have even more organization with our various different tradespeople coming in. And of course, we've got a showcase type of a project that we're even thinking of buying a drone so that we can take photos of this thing from all different angles. So we're kind of excited about that too. So
yeah, you gotta look at the success of the project. It's unfortunate to hear you didn't put like I always tell people, we're a for-profit company, and I want you to make a lot of money on the project, and I want to make a lot of, and a lot's not the right word. I'm not a money-driven guy, but I need to support my team and the Mountain View family and all those things along the way. Because if you don't make any money, I'm not going to be here to take care of your project 10 years from now and all those types of obvious things. And that's what this show is all about. I really appreciate you giving us that example, because that's what we want to do, is bring contractors and vendors and different people in here to talk about price qualifying and how to set up your systems and structures to listen while you're driving from picking up that problem part to the next part and maybe get some marketing gold along the way to say, I learned from this mistake, and then I picked up a mistake I'm not going to make from A to B. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know?
Was there another project that might have been your most challenging this year, or you kind of lumped the two together? So is there anything else that came across?
No, there's one other project that was a good learning experience for us, and that was a project that we decided to take on as a subcontractor to another general contractor.
Okay.
So as you can probably tell, I'm always talking about the customer experience, and the bottom line is I want that homeowner to love us and to tell their friends when they get jealous that the only people that they should call is us. And so to do that, obviously you need to have extremely good control over your process and over the construction process and all of the people who come onto their property. So when those roles are reversed and we decide to come in and somebody else is hiring us to come and build a deck, I've got this one where it's a deck for a custom home builder. And this deck is obscene. It is 2,400 square feet. It wraps 275 feet around the entire perimeter of this new, brand new custom timber home. So just from the sheer size of it, you think, okay, we can create some economies of scale. I think we can price the beauty of this one, at least going into the project, was we didn't have to design it. We didn't have to sell it to the homeowner. And so I'm already thinking of things that I can do to sort of back out some of those costs, and you know, because we didn't have to spend the marketing dollars to get the customer. We didn't have to spend the time to sell them on this. This was, they were coming to us because that general contractor wants their customer to have a good experience, right? What we found was that if we're not in charge of what's going on there, we lost a lot of control because there was a few things going on. This one here, I made the GC on the job do the footings.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only were they enormous and completely over-engineered for what was going on, but they also had a separate subcontractor coming through and resting an open porch structure on top of my deck all the way around the house. And so I couldn't be responsible for...
Hey, you don't know what that else is.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the GC does the footings. So going into this project, it seemed like a really good deal because we didn't have to design it. We didn't have to sell it. We didn't have to spend the marketing dollars to get the customer. And so I thought, okay, we're probably not going to have to babysit this one a whole lot. And it's really just a huge deck. And that's all we're responsible for. But then you consider that there's also another contractor that's going to be building an open porch structure to rest on top of the deck that I'm building. And so at that moment in time, I made the decision, okay, so I'm going to make the general contractor here responsible for the footings.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's great if the GC is responsible for the footings and does the footings and all of that stuff. But of course, I had to babysit that.
Right.
Right? I also took a look at these deck plans that came from the architect and said, you know, guys, this, the way that this is designed, you have about $12,000 of extra material on here that you probably don't need. As a pro bono, as a service, as a way to get my leg in the door, I showed this to the customer. I spoke with the architect, got the plans changed, and basically saved the homeowner about $12,000. That was the same $12,000 that the homeowner then, you know, I still got price pressure on this whole project. You know, I was doing that as a way to get in the door, get the project, but then I still felt really squeezed to get this project. Again, it was so big, and I thought it was so simple. I said, fine, let's do it. So we get out there, and we do our thing. Once the footings are in, we built this deck. We framed it up in about 10 days, which is what I had assumed we would do. And then I told them, well, we're waiting for the porch guys to come and rest their porch on the deck before we throw down any deck boards, because we want to make sure that everybody's done dropping hammers before we put this decking on.
Right.
And railing. Well, 45 days later, we're back out at the job to throw down these deck boards. And that is just complete loss of control, right? Because it would only take us maybe another 10 days to deck the deck. But we had to let this framing sit out exposed in the summer.
Move all over.
Rain on, beat on by hail, sun, I mean everything. So by 45 days later when we get back, we've got, you know, 3-4 days of wrestling with all of the framing and doing planing and shimming and all of this stuff. So not a good deal, right? And so then the porch company comes in and they take about 30 days to build their porch. And we can't put up our railings until those porch posts are in place. So it just quickly turned into, I mean, a nightmare scenario for me, but and a total loss of control. But still, some positives there. So, I mean, we learn about, we learn how important that control is.
Yeah.
Everybody we've had on the show, when we say a challenge, it's all about people. And getting people in the right place.
That does seem to be
challenge.
A common denominator, yes.
And, you know, and that's what's, it's been so fun to have these conversations with different people in the market is all about getting the right people together, you know. And sometimes the best thing you can say is no. And you have to learn by doing that. It's like, it doesn't matter if Mountain View hires a company to do systems and structures and follows the E-Myth Revisited perfectly, or you pay Architect their fee, which it's all about going out and doing it. You can't, there's no perfect thing that you just go the Architect book and you go do it. It's not nothing against Architect. I think they've been a great franchise. I think their marketing, I think I would recommend the Architect thing. It's just in life and it takes time, and that's what this show is all about, is to listen to each other and the mistakes we've all made and try to help each other make less mistakes.
Well, I think that's the critical thing, is that we all learn from our mistakes, right? Or at least we would like to think we do. And I think for the most part that's accurate. And the more mistakes you hear from other people, not that you take joy in their mistakes, but the reality is you can learn from other people's mistakes too. And that's I think the benefit partially of what we have to offer listeners on this podcast, is just that, from people like yourself that have had different experiences that they may not have seen. A light bulb goes off and it'll help them save money to make money and make their business better going forward.
So I got another question.
Sure.
What's the hottest, best decking board? What deck board would you put on your project for your house right now?
Right now, there's a product from TimberTech, which is called, it's Earthwood Evolutions, but it's their new Legacy Collection. And it's a really neat product. It's a capped composite. Like the old deck boards, the old composite deck boards is just wood and plastic, right? Plastic and wood fibers.
And that's still what I have on mine, and it just, you see it. You
it's
know.
Still porous. It can. Yeah. Somebody drops a burger, it can stain. So here in Colorado, having a really durable plastic cap coat on that board goes a long way to protecting the board, but it also introduces color, and it also introduces a lot of texture. And on these particular Legacy Collection from TimberTech, they have a hand scraped. They call it a hand scraped texture.
Cool.
Feels really nice on bare feet. The colors are very, very warm. It doesn't feel like a plasticky composite deck. And the beauty of this Legacy Collection is that the color actually varies a little bit from board to board.
Huh.
So like a hardwood floor, you know, you love the different colors and the different tones that come out in a hardwood floor or a door. You get that same feeling with a Legacy Collection deck from TimberTech.
Well, you answered that so well, I got to keep going.
Sure.
Railing, handrail.
You know, we found this year, and this is one of the positives that comes out of one of those nightmare projects. Found a good fabricator here locally who can make sort of a standard black powder-coated steel railing, right? With just pickets spaced every 4 inches per code. But it seems to be the most popular thing right now is just having a standard black rail and then throwing a deck board across the top. Call it a beer rail or a wine rail, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the homeowner is into, call it a Kool-Aid rail if you wanted to. But the idea is that you can visually just tie the color from the deck to the railing, and that black railing just seems to disappear. People can kind of see right through it. And it also saves some money over some of these more expensive manufactured railing products.
Ben installed all these different sections, what, probably 8 different ways you did railing in our showroom, which is so cool to come see it in real life because it's so hard on a magazine, or, you know, it's 4-foot real sections that both interior and exterior railing that you can touch and feel and look at it to design those outdoor living spaces. So it's been super fun and helpful for my company is to create a space that has all kinds of products that not necessarily Mountain View focuses on, but when we have networking events or, you know, designers and contractors and architects send their homeowners in here, they inspired from motorized shades going over the railing or behind the railing and on the railing and all the different colors and metals and mediums and stuff mixed together, that I've been a lot to be thankful for, that he put his time and effort to put all that stuff into the showroom. So if you're in the Denver area, you got to come down and see all his stuff. So the last question I have is, when we did the pergola, we had all this talk about all these cool new hand-hewn or different, you know, wire brush. What have you used? What's the most unique and the coolest one that you've seen from taking cedar, typically what you use, right, or redwood or whatever, that you're actually doing a wire brush? What technique have you found is the most prominent that most of your customers and you like the best?
So we use Western red cedar for the most of our timbers and most of our shade structures. Unlike most of our competitors, we only offer textured cedar. So while a lot of guys are out there selling rough sawn cedar, we offer three different textures. We offer a hand-hewn texture where you've got this scooping effect. Very smooth. It tends to scrape away a lot of the old wood, and it really prepares the cedar to accept the stain. We've got a wire-brushed texture, which, as you can imagine, kind of scoops out a lot of the softer wood, but it leaves the wood grain. It raises the grain of the wood so you can really see the natural character of the wood. And then we also offer smooth cedar. The benefit of the hand hewn or the smooth cedar is obviously if it's a living space, this is all about spending time together, and there's probably kids every once in a while. A lot of people don't like to have splinters happening to their kids if they've got wood on their project, right?
Totally.
So with that in combination with the beautiful texture and the way that it takes the stain, I would have to say the hand-hewn cedar texture is our best seller.
Cool. And you put different products on the pergola in the showroom, didn't you?
We did, yeah. So, we've got examples.
So we can put pictures in the show notes, but, you know, nothing like seeing it in person. So we're just going to see a wave of people coming in to this showroom in Denver to see Ben's masterpiece, pergola. And then, boy, you're going to get a lot of phone calls after this, baby.
I hope so. Well, we have fun with it.
Well, and for our listeners, just to give a little bit further description, Ben's work essentially encompasses what we use as our conference room. And so our customers are coming in, we're sitting down looking at plans all the time, and they're all constantly commenting on the decking material and the railings and wanting to know what went into that. So it is worth coming, like Devin said, coming by and taking a look.
Yeah, that brings up a good... It was funny when we started that, because multiple people are like, damn, what do you mean you're going to just put a pergola in the middle of the whole showroom and then you're going to design and make that your conference room? I was like, yeah, I don't want a typical conference room. I want a place that brings a creative vibe, and you see colors and different products and all of our different doors and stuff to kind of create an intimate space. You know, it's the most important space of my 10,000 square feet, because that's where we hand over the pen to sign the deal. So it's an important space. But Ben has really made it comfortable, and I think that's what he does with his company. When I go to his outdoor living spaces and see it, he has so much passion for the space, which just shows are done so well. It's like the one that we were involved with, the gal from Australia, that she had some wood that you designed into the outdoor space. And the after, like Ben always said, you want to be invited to the party. Right, Ben sent me that picture. It was showing the doors we supplied, and it was you and your project manager below, and what, 40 people up above on this deck. And it's like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's what it's all about: spending time outdoors with the family and being able to have all the connections and the expertise to pull it all together and make it happen.
So you'll see in the show notes all Ben's contact information. Thanks for coming, man.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for having us.
Well, that was a great show, don't you think, Devin? Listening to Ben's comments from A to Z, it was pretty helpful, I think, for our audience today.
Went a few twists and turns. We talked a lot more about the franchising, but I think that's important to talk about how you want to run your business, with him diving into it, not doing it anything like that at all.
Well, I think it's critical, because the reality is most of our contractors and architects out there, the amount of detail, the amount of moving parts going towards a given project is pretty significant. So if you don't have systems in place and you're not constantly trying to tweak it and make it better, there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road.
Yeah, and it's great to get his real world, you know, real from the heart. You could tell he was so thought it was going to be so great for that big project, and then everybody, to do it right, you get nailed. And that same project, we ended up on the same deal, you know, a few details that we're still taking care of, and we will make it right, you know, because we're all in this for the long haul. And that's what's really been fun about it. All the guests we've been talking to is that everybody is all about wanting to do it right, for lack of a better term, get rid of the shysters.
No, exactly. And I think the critical thing, too, is just learning again from, it's a common theme, learning from those mistakes. And we all make them, and they're painful, right? And so they're fresh in the memory. And hopefully this gives people that are listening the benefit of other people's mistakes to help prevent them for themselves going forward to make their businesses better and better.
Yeah, and the details of the stuff he did in the showroom that, correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably going to go out there and look at those.
Oh, absolutely.
The cedar,
check
the different
it a lot, yeah.
Cedar stuff. And
that detail.
And that's what's, it's a cool passion of mine to bring this stuff to life that we've worked so hard for, that when people are looking into those specific things and listening to this and say, oh, I need a pergola, let's run down to Mountain View and see the different ways we can get that done. And that's what's so awesome, that being able to put this all together is like, if you build it, they will come, and they'll put the awareness out, and when the time is right for our contractors and architects to need those different components.
Well, particularly, we've been able to incorporate a couple of, you know, nice Anderson doors showing different products, some gliding doors that are attached to the pergola, which gives the folks coming into our showroom other ideas in terms of how they can incorporate indoor and outdoor living. So
yeah, so when people come around the country and come into our showroom, they're like, to toot our horn, as they say, this is the best showroom I've seen, and it's real. You know, it's that door you're talking about is 16 feet wide by
exactly.
Curtain door that is real, instead of a corner section or a piece of literature that you can see it real life. But then we have all the color chips and then a big TV with all the pictures to talk through and really understand. We put our systems in place. You know, we have our systems and structure that Jamie Rowe helped us put together for this complex world we live in. On every project is different, but we have a baseline to make that project unique and successful. Like Ben talked about, the challenges of the projects are always challenging.
No, absolutely. And I think, as Ben was describing on that big job, part of the reason he was able to get that job was because of the detail of information, and for the customer ultimately to be able to see what the finished product was going to look like. And I think that's one of the advantages here in our showroom, is that people can see the displays full size. Both contractors, architects, and the ultimate homeowner can see what the finish is going to look like. And when they understand it, they're more inclined to move forward.
Yeah, and the TimberTech, you know, it's fun to see, to hear about the newest products, because it's like composite decking. You go to home shows and it's like, there's a
overwhelming.
It's so many. It's amazing that industry. How many back way in the day? Our distribution center sold the original Trek, so we'd get rail cars of Treks coming in, and I went and toured in Reno, Nevada, where the Treks was made, and it was back when he was talking about before all these PVC cap stuff, and I'll never forget walking in the back of that and seeing literally just trucks of wood coming up and trucks of Walmart bags, and people literally in there just shoving and then out on the other end comes this extrusion. And that's literally how the decking world came to life, you know, and when Trex was publicly traded and they saw how what it cost to make a PVC, to make the original decking boards, is like $250,000 for an extruder, and you just got to go get wood and get plastic bags and you
put
have
it together.
But then now the industry is totally recreated, because all those products that have reared their ugly head with the dyes, like, you know, Walmart, the bags used to be blue. Well, now they're white, and that was because Trex paid Walmart to make the bags go from blue to white, because the blue dye would screw up all the coloring.
Interesting.
In the decking. So it's so cool to talk through the new products and keep us fresh in our minds, even though, you know, we're in the trenches in windows, doors, and hardware, but it's fun to hear about different products. And TimberTech has been generous, and they donate all that product to the architect team that you see in our showroom here in Mountain View. And there's so many people in the circle that's really brought Mountain View to life, and that hopefully now we can bring all those people back, pay it forward, or pay it back, I guess, through the podcast show that you can see all these products in the show notes.
Well, and one of the things that Ben touched on, which I think is critically important, is how things weather over time. I mean, we live in a tough environment. I mean, it's great here in Colorado, but 1 week we could have hailstorms, which, or many weeks, right? And the effect on products can be significant. I mean, we talk about that all the time as an example with the E-Series windows and how the, you know, the extruded aluminum is much stronger than a lot of our competitors with beer can cladding, and what a difference that can make to the customer long term, because you're not only paying for it now, you're paying for it in the long run. So
yeah, and that's what I love how Ben is all about. He wants to refer it, and when people see that space, they're Arkadec is the company, and that's who we're all about here. So awesome job again.
Great show.
Look forward to seeing you next time.
You have been listening to The Art of Construction. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.